Welcome back to the City of Smack Podcast on the City of Smack Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Chavez, and we're going sponsor-free for this episode since I've been tied up with some work and haven't been able to coordinate with a sponsor. But if you're feeling supportive, the City of Smack Venmo account is at City of Smack. If you want to get me a cup of coffee or a beer for putting this all together, I'll give you a shout-out on the next episode. But if you're interested in using this space to sponsor your brand, event, product, or whatever you like, shoot me a note. I'm Chris at CityofSmack.com. That's the email to hit up. Chris at CityofSmack.com. While we're at it, if you're listening, I'd also love it if you can leave a little review on Apple Podcasts. It doesn't take long, and it helps get this show out to new listeners. If you're digging this episode, also feel free to share it on your Instagram story. Tag at CityofSmack. I'll be sure to repost it. And if you tag our guests, I'm sure they will too. So who is the guest? My guest for today's episode is Kara D'Amato. She's been doing the podcast rounds in 2020 since she's been on fire all year. So maybe you've heard her on a different show, but I hope this conversation adds a whole nother side to her. She's a mom. She's a realtor. She finished 15th at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials back in February. But ever since then, she's been dropping PRs in the 5K, the half marathon, all throughout the summer and fall. Next week, she'll be taking a crack at possibly breaking Janet Baucom's 52-12 American record in the 10 mile. She'll be competing in a small race in the DC area called the Up Dog 10 miler. So you'll hear more about why she chose that name for that race, how training's been going, and just what she credits all this recent success to. I also knew that Kira was a Survivor superfan, so we get into that toward the end of the show. This is a real fun episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So without further ado, here is Kira D'Amato. All right, now we welcome on Kira D'Amato. Kira, I feel like I'm late to having you on the podcast since you've been doing a bunch of different shows at this point, but welcome to the City of Smack podcast. And I kind of want to start off with like all this attention that you've been getting since, you know, the Olympic trials. Like, have you started to get used to it a little bit, or like, is it still sort of like pinching you and there are surprises that come along the way?
Yeah, that part has been pretty confusing about this whole process. Like my times and the shape I'm in, like I've trained my butt off for the last like four some years to get to where I am. So that part all makes very like logical sense to me, but the reaction is very confusing. I can't wrap my head around it. When you just said like you were excited to get me on the podcast, I feel like it's like joke on you. Like, why, why would you want me on your podcast? Like, you have such an awesome thing going on. But thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
The big thing from your story sort of has been you ran in college at American. And then I think the way you've described it is just kind of like a decade of hobby jogging. Now, how much, and like, how would you describe sort of that level of hobby jogging? Because when I think of it, it's just like maybe occasionally one workout a week would be mixed into some hobby jogging. The rest of it is just easy runs. So what was that decade like for you?
It was pretty much signing up for any local race that sounded appealing and doing that, and then kind of being resistant to running in between the races. Or, you know, if my husband was like, hey, you want to go for a run? I'm like, are you going with me? Because I would love to hang out with you. But if you're trying to encourage me to get out the door and do something, I think I'm okay just sitting here on the couch. But I don't know. It was like, I've always really enjoyed running. And, you know, I would meet friends and go for runs or walks or whatever. And I don't know, I would find like, running was just a different part of my life then. I was more of like the running fan that like, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda. I just sat there like wishing a little bit. And then finally, you know, the tables turned and I got the chance to really get after it again. So I took the opportunity.
In sort of that decade, how much would you say you, I guess you kind of described it more as a fan, but among, you know, friends and family, did you sort of still keep on sort of like that identity as a runner that you had maybe in college?
That's a really thoughtful question. I struggle with that a little bit. Like when I stopped running and I went into the corporate world, like I was, to me, I was Kira the runner who didn't run anymore. So finding that, and, you know, people would ask about me, And I'd be like, yeah, I'm a runner. But then I like wasn't really running too much. So it was a weird time for me. And I struggled a little bit with it, I guess. But yeah, it's always like, I mean, my husband and I, we watched all the track meets on TV. So I was just like a super fan during that time.
And how much did you pick up from watching those races where there's a degree, I feel like, of FOMO where you're just like, I know maybe at my best, and if I would have tapped into this potential, I could be in this race. And so you're kind of picturing like how I would have maybe reacted to XYZ move during like a track race or something like that. But, you know, how did you sort of take that approach to watching races?
You know, yeah, there was a lot of FOMO. Like watching it being like, why wasn't that me? And then kind of getting, you know, a little upset with myself that I didn't like push it through a little harder. But then there was the other part that was like, whew, I'm glad that's not me. And I'm just sitting on my couch and I'm not like, you know, out there huffing and puffing right now. But, I remember, I think it was it the 2012 Olympic trials where there was a tie for third place in the 100 meters? Is that mm-hmm. Okay? Well, that my husband and I were watching on the couch, and when there was a tie, like we got all hyped up. I think it was like right around the time we were getting married, so we staged like a 100 meter race like in the middle of our block, just on the street, and we had some friends come out to see who would win, him versus me. And it was like, we, you know, one of us picked one athlete and the other one picked the other, and we raced. I can't really remember who won, which makes me think I probably did not win that. I think I would have a very clear memory if I was a clear victor, but I don't know. But we were always just like really big fans, and it was really exciting to see how American distance running, and especially the sprinters, were progressing, and all like the field athletes just like kicking butt all over the place. So, it was just really fun to be a fan, but you're right. Like I did watch from afar and think like, how would I have done that? Or, you know, I would do it this way, or, oh, that was a good move. And so it was, it was a lot of learning. We'll call that my research and development time. How about that?
I like that. And when you're coming out of that period, is your sort of like perspective on the sport a little bit more refreshed, where now as you do start to run, you know, it's never really fun, like when you're putting in hard efforts and trying to get back into top shape. But did you feel that you had missed that for a period of time?
Yeah, I had. But like I've seen like the whole cycle of it. So now, like, I knew what it felt like to be an elite runner, and then, you know, kind of just being a spectator and trying to get into shape, like, that's really, really tough to do. Like creating a routine and breaking through those barriers at first before it becomes routine, it's really hard to do. So I just gained a whole different perspective about running. And I think where I'm at now, I just feel so much gratitude and like appreciation, and just because I've seen every spectrum of running like in my life, and I'm so appreciative and thankful for where it is now. It's been really fun.
That routine that you mentioned, I know it must be totally different to strike that work, you know, mom life balance and running thrown into the mix under normal times, like pre-pandemic. So kind of, can you outline what that was like? And then how much has that dramatically shifted since March of this year?
Yeah. You know, I think for me to get into a good routine and have running in my life, it's really taken a really supportive family who's all been on board. So, I mean, a typical day in the D'Amato household, usually my husband's getting up early with my son. He's like a super early riser, gets up at 5, but my husband kind of like wakes up and is like 0 to 100 ready to go. So he can handle that. And so he'll get up with my son, and then my daughter and I wake up around the same time, somewhere in the 6s, and I get the kids all ready, get them to school, and then I sneak in my first run and then do all the real estate and anything else that I need to do, chores, laundry through the day. Then try to sneak in a second run and then pick up my kids and go through, you know, the whole dinner and hang out and bath and bedtime routine, and then whatever left over before I go to bed. But it's really like, you know, it's kind of just like a grind, and like you look at every day of like, what do I have to do and what's most important and what can get shifted until another day, and just, I don't know, somehow you squeeze it all in and make it fit.
I know. And during the pandemic, it feels like there's just like these pockets of time that have just opened up because so much of it happens from home. Like you don't have to go into an office every single mm-hmm. day and you're not in transit to go for the run. Maybe you just start from home. So have you noticed that like, oh, okay. Like there's these little instances of time that like I've been able to pick up because of everything going on.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit, but like at first when everything started, we kept our kids home with us for, I think about just over three months maybe. And that was difficult because then I was getting up super early and shoving in my runs before my husband went to work. So that made for a lot of early mornings for me. And then, you know, I'd spend all day with the kids and then hopefully sneak in another run like at night. But being that I don't really have much of a social life or much free time anyways, it really, I don't know, I feel like it hasn't changed too much for me. And now the kids are back in like a private daycare. So we've gotten back to some sort of normal routine and, you know, being as safe and as careful as we can, but, been able to just get back at it. But yeah, I wish I could find some of that time. If you have any like tips of how to find those little pockets of time, I would love that.
One thing I find really interesting about sort of your training too, is that I think for the most part, you primarily do a lot of it alone, right?
Yeah.
And as people are kind of, you know, the situation right now is not getting any better right away yet with the pandemic, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's a bunch of people who might be forced into somewhat lockdown situations where they will have to, you know, start to train alone. So how have you made it work for you? And like, what is it about training alone that other people could maybe start to get used to just to kind of get by over these next couple months?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. And I think for me, like I started with running being my alone time as like a mom, just needing a little space. So it was really comfortable for me to have that freedom and control to just be me. And now that, you know, and I ended up getting, like, I have a girlfriend that I'll run with long on the weekends, and I have a buddy that can do some track workouts with me. But, you know, I don't even know quite how you balance that out or how you become good at it if you're used to it. But for me, like, I just really find that time to be a gift, and it's kind of like sacred time. I listen to whatever I want to listen to, and I just really, I don't know, just like being by myself a little bit. So I think that's like, I can't really figure out if I'm an introvert or extrovert or extrovert or introvert. I don't know what I am, but I don't mind being alone for that. And I think when you start slow and you start with like, you know, manageable workouts, and then you conquer that, and then you have the confidence that you can do more by yourself. And then, you know, with tempo runs, like if you were telling me the first workout, go out and do like a 15-mile tempo by yourself, I mean, that's like mind-boggling. But if you start out and just get a 2-mile tempo in, you know, and next week you get a little bit more and a little bit more, and you just get, you get that confidence in yourself and listening to your body. And, you know, I really enjoy that. And I feel like I can really tune in and listen to what my body's telling me. But I don't know, I don't really have any good tips, I guess.
It jumped out to me when I found out that you're being coached by Scott Rasko. Mm-hmm. And it mainly because it's like, I've watched, you know, Alan Webb documentaries and like read about him. And so he worked with him for a period of time. How did that sort of relationship come to be?
Yeah. So I went to a rival high school of Alan Webb. So, and he was a year older than me. So I always knew of Scott Rasko. And you know, like at races, I feel like we'd maybe say hi or he'd say good job, but you know, it was mainly just knowing of each other. And then after college, I joined his DC Elite team, when Alan was on that, and we had a cool squad of people that we were training with. And then when I was injured, I kind of felt like I was forced out of that, but we remained like, that's the thing I really appreciate about Scott Rasko, is like, he really cares about me as a person. So even when I wasn't running and training under him, he'd still like check in and just see how I was doing. And we'd, you know, catch up and, you know, talk about whatever. And so when I came back for this like bonus round or round two, you know, I was kind of doing it my own way, and I'd call him and ask for a little bit of advice, and he would just shake his head and say that I'm just like a nut. So, But I had some unconventional training methods at first. And then finally, when I felt like I wanted to like really buckle down and have intentional training, I reached out like seriously to him and it's like, hey, like, I think I really need your help. And he's like, oh, you think that now? Really? You think so? And I'm like, okay, this is me asking, will you please like coach me full time? And he's like, if you listen full time. And I'm like, that's probably never going to happen. Like ask my husband, but it's been really great. And I appreciate that he's just a wizard of a coach. Like how he looks at running and just can see it in such a simple form. Like he is like just an insanely good coach. And I appreciate like now seeing that he's coached me like right out of college and now in my 30s. I've seen his coaching evolve too. And he gives me a lot more freedom now. And he understands that it's, you know, when I talk about my list of priorities, it's my family and then my job and then running. So like, he's very respectful of that, but then he's also firm with me. And like some days I'll call him and say, oh man, tomorrow's a really busy day. I have a home inspection and a settlement. Like, oh man, I don't know if I can run. And he'll just be like, well, get up earlier, find the time, like go to bed early, get up early. Like you can do it. So I appreciate his understanding, but yet like creative and like just firm thinking of like, you know, if it's important to you, you'll make time for it.
I don't want to gloss over it, but before there was this structure, these unconventional training ways that you had, what are we talking about there?
Okay. There was two things. These were my two, this is going to blow your mind that this is how I trained for a while, but I was on a 3-day week. And my goal was to run 20 miles in 3 days. And so I could do like, I could take a day off and then run 20 miles and then take a day off, or I could run 7 miles each day, or I could do 10 miles, take a day off and then 10 miles. So yeah, I was on a 3-day training week. It like, if I felt like working out when I got out the door, then I would do some like pickups, but there was no sort of structure in a 3-day training week. I told Roscoe this and he's like, I think you're the only person in this universe that has ever considered even a 3-day training week. And I'm like, well, it just makes sense to get 20 miles in every 3 days. But, and then eventually I got to the point where I put myself on the root beer float training plan, which is if I ran 10 miles in any one day, I would get a root beer float that night. And so then like, and I was really, that was like a big root beer float phase of my life. So every day I was like, well, I need 10 miles because I really want to have a root beer float tonight. So I started running pretty much 10 miles a day, and that's like 70 miles a week. So if you start doing that, you can like, that's pretty decent marathon training on its own. So yeah, those are my two training plans that Roscoe just laughed at me, not like with me, but laughed at me.
So it, was there a point where you had to turn over sort of like, okay, here's what I've done the last couple of weeks. And he just looks at it and is like, what is this?
Yeah. And he's like, okay, so where's your training plan? I'm like, well, you're going to have to log on to Strava because that's how, like, that's what calculates my mileage. That's what tracks it. And he's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I just kind of run on a daily basis. And then Strava puts out my weekly mileage at the end. And he's like, oh my gosh, we have a lot of work to do. But the thing is, I made it really fun. So as silly as that all sounds, I think the takeaway from it is anyone coming up with their own training plan, like whatever you need to do to make it fun and make it entertaining for you, who cares if it doesn't really make too much sense as long as you're doing it in a healthy way and not getting injured. But like, just make it fun. Like that's the name of the game.
Has there been a point where you think, or do you remember the first moment that maybe you surprised Roscoe in a workout?
You know, I don't think I've ever surprised that man. That's how good he is. Like he sends me these workouts and it surprises me because I'm like, there's no way I can hit this. But I'm like, but to humor him, I'll go out and I'll do exactly what he says and then I'll finish it. And I'm surprised. And I'm like, holy cow, I can't believe I did that. And he's like, why would I send that to you if I didn't think you can do it? So I don't really think he's ever been surprised just because he's such a intuitive coach.
In the past year, as you're like ramping up for the trials and like this major breakthrough that has kind of carried into the rest of 2020, has there been any, because you said you get the workouts and sometimes you're surprised. Is there one or a couple in particular that you particularly remember being like, wow, I really thought this was going to be hard, but I blew it out of the water?
Yeah, there was one recently that I did that it was a 4K and then a 2K on the track. And I did the 4K, I think just under 450 per mile pace. So that, I think that was what, 10 laps. And then I did, I had like maybe like 3 or 4 minutes break. And then I did the 2K under 440 pace.
Wow.
And so it was a little faster than he prescribed. But after that workout, that was like, I was like, this is probably the best run of my life. And just knowing how like strong and consistent I felt, like I walked away from that being like, that just surpassed any race or any run I've ever done. I think that was like just my best like running thing I've ever done, which is like a little sad to happen on a track by yourself, right? But yeah, that one, I was surprised at how great it felt, which gave me a lot of confidence going into this fall, like racing season. So
when, I mean, that sounds ridiculous and crazy to me, just how impressive that workout was. As a fan of the sport, like I'm sure there's still that level of this is all so much fun to continue to be doing. As a professional runner, which is funny to think that you've taken up this sort of like a mantle, do you find yourself asking the question? Because I've started sort of doing this with like work with my coach. Is like she'll give me a workout and then I'll ask, okay, so what was the purpose of that one and why did we do that? Do you find yourself doing that too?
No, I don't. And it's so I sometimes think maybe I should be asking more questions, but I don't know. I think I understand how Roscoe's training me now. Like I can almost predict, even though the workouts are very different week to week, I can almost predict exactly what a track workout's going to be, how much volume it's going to be, and what. So I see where he's going, and I kind of get it. But yeah, I also just have this like just 100% trust in him. That like, I feel like I don't even need to ask, like, are you going to get me where I want to go? You are. Okay, great. So whatever it takes, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. So
how do you sort of approach race day? Because, you know, when someone, like I think of the trials, there's so much attention on everyone else. And a lot of the people just have the, I'm happy to be here sort of mentality. Mm-hmm. In Atlanta, what were you like on the starting line?
Yeah, it was weird to balance it in my head because like, I'd say there was a little voice that, you know, the imposter syndrome, like, what are you doing here? Like you have kids, you're a realtor, like you don't belong here. You're not a professional. So there, you know, there's that little voice that always comes in and tries to psych you out. But then there was another voice that I've always had. That's like this overly confident, like, you know, okay, let's go try to win this thing, you know, like, and to me also, like I wasn't going in to try to win it. I was going in with my like goal of the day. And if I can execute this plan, I think I'll do really, really well. But to like try to keep away from all that noise and all those little voices, I've come up with a very like internal approach that's like, here's my goal for the day. I'm going to treat it like any other day. Like it's going to be, you know, this workout. I've done this hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. So it's like, I just go through that same routine, which keeps it very normal. It keeps like the pressure off. But then like, even at the trials, there's so many people there that like in my head, I'm like, this is just another workout. And then it was like, that was confusing. Like, why are all these people here to see my workout? You know, this is, but yeah, I'm still like working through that a little bit, but you know, I'm learning just to tell that little voice that says like, you don't belong, just to shut up, you know, just shut it, get out of here. Like I'm going to do this. So, but yeah, it's a work in progress.
And I kind of want to go over the course of the next couple big runs that you had. And shortly after that, I think the next thing I remember was this solo time trial that you sort of did on the track. It was a really fast 5K, huge PR for you. And it was, the thing was like, it was kind of like, I think considered just a time trial or like even a virtual race. How did you flip that switch to get that competitive energy going when there was no one around and no one really to base yourself off of?
You know, the confidence came from my training. So like week after week doing all these workouts that suggest I can run in the low 15s for the 5K. I think the workout before that race, and maybe I'm not remembering this correctly, I have the worst memory ever, but I think it was 20 times 400. And I started at like 70 and broke it down, I think, to like 65 or something, and with like very little rest. And that gave me, I'm like, man, I feel really comfortable running sub 70. Like I just did that 20 times. Like I feel really good. So when like getting to the starting line of that, and just thinking about pace, okay, like 72, 73. I'm like, wow, I could do this 20 times. This should feel pretty relaxed. So I think like all the confidence just comes from the training, and then just having a goal that you want to hit that day. And just like, I have a lot of unfinished business. There's a lot of stuff that I felt like I didn't quite check off the list the first time. So knowing that my PR was 1609, I'm like, I really like, I need to show that one up. So I don't know.
And then in addition to that, I kind of like looked at it as sort of just like from just kind of like an analysis, like an analyst perspective. I looked at it and saw, all right, great performance at the trials, great solo time trial. But what does this all mean when you actually put it together in an actual race? And then there was that 10K in Boston. And then later on, the half marathon most recently in Michigan, where kind of I was like, okay, I see your name on paper, but there's also these other really accomplished people. There's, you know, an Abby DiAgostino, and there's like a Molly Seidel in there too. And all of a sudden you're playing the party crasher in this sort of situation. Did you sort of start to, now that you get confidence from the workouts, how do you translate that to, okay, I know I can perform well, but I think I have a chance of winning.
That seems still a little surreal, I guess, because I've always been so internal, like, and I don't really step out of my own little box to see like what that means. So like, for instance, on that 10K up in Massachusetts, like I had my own personal goal that day, but I wasn't saying, well, if I run this, how will it impact with the other runners? And I think for me, that keeps the pressure off. It keeps it really manageable and in control. And then I kind of like, you know, in my head, I'm like, well, if I run this, I should be able to compete really well. I should be up there. And similar with like the Michigan Pro Half and the recent 5K, like I went in with very like internal goals of what I was accomplishing that day. And, you know, if I was first doing that, awesome. If I was dead last, great. Like it's, you know, I don't know. It is kind of weird though, too. I can't really describe it, but, I don't know. I guess it all seems to be working right now. So I'm just going to keep on doing it.
And now I guess the next one is you vocalized sort of like this goal of possibly going after an American record. Now that's, for you to tell yourself that maybe a year ago, what would you have thought?
That's crazy. I mean, I was, when Janet Balcom broke the record, I was holding the tape. Like I somehow, like I'm on the Credit Union Cherry Blossom committee, and I somehow, that's not really my job on the committee, but I like weaseled my way down to the finish line and volunteered myself to hold the tape. Like, and I felt like that was a really big moment for me being to hold the tape. Like I was so proud that I was involved with holding the tape while Janet broke the American record for this. So yeah, and now that it's kind of all like flipped a little bit, just seems like pretty wild, pretty crazy, totally like unpredictable journey. But it's also been like kind of funny too, because I feel like no one really like puts their goals out there as like publicly, and no one like calls their shot like I'm attempting to do. But I don't know, like I guess I'm not afraid of failing, and I'm also not afraid of bringing everyone along on the journey and to see me vulnerable of what I'm attempting to do. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I won't. I hope I do. But, you know, it's been really fun having the support. And I found the more that I've shared, like what I'm trying to do or my goals, a lot of people have like really stepped up to help and to be a part of and to make sure I get there. So, a little unconventional. And I know it's like, you know, I've never won a national championship. I've never, you know, been part of like a team or anything. And I'm saying I'm going to set an American record. I know that's extremely laughable, but hopefully I'll be the one laughing on Monday.
Now, the name of the race, the Updog 10 Miler, you got the chance to name it. How quick did you come up with that?
You know, it wasn't as quick as, so I went through a lot of other possibilities, like starting with like a serious route. And then I was thinking like, why don't I just be true to like who I am? Like this is, I'm having a lot of fun with running. And like, I've kind of known as like the joke person on Strava. So I'm like, actually, I think it might've been Keith Peters and Phil Stort who kind of suggested like, why don't you make it like a joke? This is, you know, it's like kind of what you do. So then I was like thinking about like, a joke name, that's probably going to come off a little weird. And then like Up Dog came to my head. And that's actually, it's been where I think my brother told it to me like probably 15 some years ago. I actually think he told it to me before like The Office made it popular. And I was, when I was in my first round of running, I was in a hotel room with Nakia Green, Alyssa Aiken, and Samia Akbar. And we were talking about something and I just said, hey guys, like it really smells like Up Dog in here. And I forget who said it first, but like someone said, what's up, dog? And then I couldn't believe that it actually worked on these like three women because like they like don't put up with my BS that like I started laughing so hard. So I couldn't respond saying like nothing, dog, what's up with you? So then the another one was like, Samia, like, what's up, dog? I don't know. What's up? Do you know what's up, dog? And so they went back for like 5+ minutes. And I was just like rolling on the floor laughing so hard. So that probably is my most successful joke implementation of my whole life. So it holds a really, really special place in my heart. So also to play a little homage to Nakia and Samia and Alyssa. Yeah, I'm throwing that name out there. But also like, why not, right?
I love it. I love it. I think it's, and that's a great backstory to the whole thing. So this 10 miler is, you know, takes place next week. And then how does that fit into the marathon project and sort of like your training and build up to that?
I think it fits in perfect because like one day a week I do short intervals, one day a week I do tempo runs. So that's counting as my tempo run that week. And really like everything that I'm doing this fall is for track 2021. So even like the marathon project at the end of the month, like I'm in a huge base training mode right now. So these 10 mile races and marathons fit in really great with where I'm going for next year. So, I mean, and that brings me a lot of like freedom that I can take risks. Like these aren't the end goal for me. This is a stepping stone to get to where I want to go. And I can do some really cool things along the way and really, you know, shave off some times off PRs or, you know, attempt to set an American record. But all of this is just like a big base training mode for the trials next year.
So is the expectation maybe like, or has the idea of like PRing at the marathon project like come about? I mean, it just kind of feels like it comes in line sort of with just all these major breakthroughs. And yeah, it's not on a hilly course.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank goodness. Huh? I think I'm definitely, I knew the day of the Olympic trials marathon that I was in better shape than my time. I mean, the weather was tough. The course was tough. So I know I don't want to say like I'm due for it, but I know my training suggests I can run a lot faster than I have. So I'm hoping for a big PR there. I'm going to race, like I'm going to get a big PR there. I'm going to go after it. Like it's going to be a big PR there and we'll see what happens. Could just be a big blow up, but you know, I'll take the risk. Let's see what happens.
For you, now that you are sort of like in that category with the other pros that participated at the trials, what does it do for you when you see, oh, Steph Bruce put together like a great virtual New York City marathon? And then, you know, just this past week, a couple days ago, Josh Cox puts out a tweet saying that like Sarah Hall texted him saying she did the last, you know, 12.2 miles of her marathon recon trip at 2:18 marathon pace. Like when you hear that, what does it do to you?
I try to keep that, like I try to compartmentalize everything. Like that's their journey, it's not mine. And like hearing both of those things are extremely impressive. And I definitely can listen and think like, wow, that's awesome. Like that's cool. But I try not to compare myself. I don't like, you know, if I go that, you know, the tit for tat or whatever, I feel like that can get stressful. So I feel like, and that's partly why I'm able to do well now is I can acknowledge that's awesome for them. But you know, I don't know, that's awesome. But I just try not to like compare myself. I know I'm doing it my way and it may be a different way up the mountain than their routes, but I'm going to get there.
If Sarah Hall goes out in 2:18 marathon pace, are you going with her?
No, I'm crazy. I don't know if I'm that crazy though, but you know, and I, depending on how training goes next month, like we'll come up with a pace time and we'll see if that aligns with the pacers or if there are pacers or what other people are doing, that would be ideal. But I'm not afraid of running by myself too. So if it doesn't quite fit, you know, Sarah Hall is going to go out a lot faster. I'm not afraid of running by myself, but you know, ideally it would be one of the pace groups. And I think that would be a really great opportunity for me to race people in a really competitive seat, like setting. It's going to be a very, very competitive race. So I'll figure out how fast I think I can run that day and then run it. And hopefully that will put me in a good spot.
I want to touch on sponsorship briefly because, you know, with this breakthrough of a year you've had, you still are technically like an unsponsored, no like legit pro contract or anything going on. What's sort of like the latest there? And like, is that something that you definitely want to pursue?
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely love a partner in that way. I'm considering some options right now. And I'm not in a huge rush because I don't really want to rock the boat in between all of these races. And I'm trying just to, you know, get the work done and just stay focused. And when I look at what my goals are, it's to run as fast as possible. And I've done it kind of my way this way so far, and it's been working. So, but you know, I would love a sponsor. I'd love to work with someone that believes in what I can offer and kind of my unconventional path here. But it's also not like a huge driving motivator for me because like, I know what, like I can do it my way. Like I've kind of, you know, like I've kind of scrapped my way here, you know, I've grinded it out and I'm proud of how I got to where I am.
Now, I just saw an article, I think maybe it was yesterday, of the Canadian marathoner, Kinsey Middleton, I believe it was, who just signed with Saucony. And, you know, when I relayed it along to my coach, who's also like a Canadian marathoner, the first thing she noted was sort of that, you know, it's interesting for her to sign with Saucony based off of like the fact that she's run so well in like the Vaporfly shoes and that kind of stuff. And so I even had this conversation, I think, with like with another Canadian marathoner, maybe about a year ago, where it's sort of like as an unsponsored athlete, having run so well in those shoes, you have to, you know, consider that balance of like, okay, you know, that's one component to maybe a degree of the success. But now I'm faced with like this tough decision. Do I change things up a little bit? How are you sort of like balancing that as well, given that you've run well in like the Vaporfly shoes and, you know, also conducting sort of like your own research that, all right, maybe there are other options and it's out there.
Yeah, I've been trying out a lot of different options lately, and there's a lot of shoes that feel really good. And I would like to think like shoes don't define me and I'll be in okay. You know, every company makes their own version and they all seem very, very competitive with each other. So we'll see. But I mean, one of like the blessings and the curse of not being sponsored is, you know, I buy my own shoes, but I buy whatever, you know, I'm kind of what works for me right now. And I've been running in these shoes for the last few years now, and I know they work, but I'm, you know, I'm definitely open to seeing what else works too, I guess. But.
And then the hope for 2021 is, I think I saw from your interview with the Fast Women newsletter, was doubling.
We'll see. Like, we'll see when we get there. I want to run whatever I have the best shot of making a team. And if we get there and we think it's focusing on one, or we think it's doubling, or like, seriously, Chris, like if you told me like your best shot is in like the 100 or 200 meters, like sign me up, like whatever it takes, like wherever I'm going to have the best shot, I'll run that. I think with my, like, you know, my background with marathoning, I think probably 10K is going to be probably my prime event, but we'll see. I think there's a lot of potential left in the 5K that I haven't really got into yet. So we'll see. When we get there, we'll figure it out. But yeah.
You told me you remember watching the 2012 trials, but where were you sort of 4 years ago watching like the 2016 Olympics? Because to think about the fact that you're now talking about a shot of making the Olympic team as a hope possibly for next year sounds like a wild jump.
Yeah, I had my daughter on August 1st, 2016. The Olympic opening ceremony was August 5th, 2016. So I had just come home from the hospital, and I remember ordering, like, even before she was born, I knew she was going to be like an Olympic baby, that I ordered her this little like onesie that said Quinn's first Olympics. And it was like a little red, white, and blue tutu thing. It was really, really cute. But I did that because, like, I mean, I felt like my dreams were over, but like maybe one day she would get into some sort of sport or some sort of situation where she could be a part of the Olympics. And then we'd have this really cute picture of her when, you know, her first Olympics when she was like 4 days old. So yeah, I was on my couch, just like with a newborn, trying just to like recover from just having a baby. That's where I was.
The 4 year journey is incredible.
It's been a wild ride, man. It's been a wild ride for sure.
So with the trials sort of next year, now this is like definitely like looking ahead, but how far do you feel like you want to take this right now?
I'm going to take this as far as I can. Like, my family is committed with supporting this journey, like through the finish line. And I see this as a long journey. I mean, as long as my family's happy and healthy and this is sustainable, and as long as I'm really enjoying it, improving, having fun, and improving, maybe not necessarily in time, you know, like I know there's a certain point that maybe I'm not going to be able to run faster, but I haven't come close to that yet. So that's exciting. But you know, we'll see. But like, just down to my core, I'm a runner. So it's going to be like, I'm going to be a runner the rest of my life. So we'll see where this journey takes me, but I feel like I have a lot of years left in me, and I have a lot of goals on that list that I want to check off before I'm ready to hang up the shoes.
Now, one thing I do want to touch on, because you are a fellow Survivor super fan, is would you consider being on the show after the running days are over?
Yeah. And do what I, in truth be told, I have applied numerous times to the show and I've never even been called. So I definitely think I'm not what they're looking for, but I would 100%, if my family was in a good spot and I could do it, I would 100% say yes to that. I think I would be terrible. I think like as soon as I got hungry or something, like you would see a version of Kira that's like not suitable for TV. But so have you ever applied?
So I've never applied. You know, I've had James Lim on the podcast, and he was a sprinter at Harvard and has been on the show a couple seasons back. And so I think I've, you know, looked online, I filled out most of the application. I think the one component I'm missing is submitting the audition tape. But similar to you, like, I do have like a vision of how I would play the game. And yeah. So you don't think you could, how far would you want to take it? Because I don't think I'd be capable of winning. My whole strategy would be, I look very young. I'd play it off like I'm maybe 21 or 22 years old, and I'll go along with whatever the tribe wants to do. And then at some point, maybe once we get to emerge and like the jury starts to come into the picture, that's when maybe I'll flip the switch and start to backstab some people. And so kind of show some true colors there. I don't think I have a good chance of winning, because when it comes down to some of the reasoning and pleading your case to the jury members, I just feel like I would just, you know, step on my own foot by saying something wrong. And my goal would be just make it to the jury and possibly top 10. That's as far as I think I could go on that show.
Okay, I'm going to scratch that for you. I think you could win it, because you're such like, you're a podcast host as one of like your many things. You're such a good listener. You're so engaging. And I feel so connected to you. Just, this is the first time we've had like a long conversation, but like, you've drawn me in, buddy. Like, I'm on Team Chris. So I think you got it. I really think you got it. And also, James, I like think he's so cool. He was on the same year as Brendan Shapiro, who is one of the owners of Potomac River Running, who I'm close with. So when Brendan went on and said like his like best buddy James, and so like he started following me on Twitter maybe, or said something, and I'm just like, I can't believe it. Like, are you kidding me? You're saying something to me? But I think he is really cool. And I think you should apply. I really think you should apply.
I think I will. It's such a small world, and the fact that, like, you know, running, you know, it also comes into it is just so funny. I'm constantly, I can't lie, I did look the other day just to see if, like, flights and stuff have, you know, opened up to Fiji, because that's where they're filming all of it recently. And so still nothing yet, but my hope would probably be they just wrapped up season 40. So I'm guessing like season 43 or something like that would be maybe like when I'd go on. So
I heard a rumor they were going to film like in the US the next, I'm like probably behind on this, but they were going to like some Wild West version or something. Have you heard anything like that?
I wouldn't mind that. I even thought just like, you know, Hawaii, like just go out there and do it. Like the fact that we're able to, you know, they're currently filming a season of The Bachelor. I mean, I think like it's easy to come kind of pull off Survivor when you've got your own islands out here. So we'll see.
What's your favorite Survivor season? Do you have a favorite season?
I do. It's, I think it's Redemption Island when Boston Rob wins it all.
Really?
Yeah, I think Boston Rob is my favorite player of all time. And the fact that this was sort of like his coronation into being like one of the greatest players ever. I thought that season was perfectly executed. And even the last one, season 40, it took me a while to really get into, but like that was the best of the best playing against each other. You had your old school versus your new school players. And so, but I think it might be Redemption Island when Boston Rob wins. That's my favorite. How about you?
Oh man, that is a good one. I really, and there were some great characters in that season.
Yeah, Philip Shepherd, I think, was
great. Yeah, the specialist. I think my favorite is David and Goliath. That one, what, like I watched like before the finale, I watched the whole season over in like a day to catch my sister up. And oh my God, it's so, that one was so funny and so like clever and so many like twists and turns. That was, oh my gosh. And Christian, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That and, like, is what, the muchachos, the three muchachos, they were so hilarious.
So for the listeners who are out there and just are like, this is a lot of Survivor talk, they just added two seasons to Netflix. And it's funny because during quarantine, I, you know, spent 9 weeks with two friends of mine up in Princeton, New Jersey. And, you know, this is a period of time where there was like no live sports. And, you know, everyone has that itch. It's like, man, I wish we could watch some basketball game or anything really. And I said, well, I've got something that might be like the closest thing to sports, and I'm obsessed with it. I've seen every season. And so I got them into Survivor. We watched a couple seasons together. And, you know, for those people looking to pass the time, you know, as maybe things start to get shut down again, Survivor's definitely on that list. I found myself going back and rewatching some old seasons.
Oh gosh, I love rewatching them too. I could rewatch Survivor. So my husband and I, we lived in Tampa for 3 years, and I went to the track one of my hobby jogger days, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'll run around this loop called a track for a couple times, and I saw Monica and Brad Culpepper there.
Wow.
So I went up to Monica and I was like, oh my God, like I just fumbled over everything I was saying and pretty much got out that I was just such a big fan of hers. And she's was like the sweetest person, so engaging. She was like, ask me anything. So I talked her head off. And then maybe like 2 weeks later, I ran into her at like CVS. I'm like, oh, Monica, you remember me? I'm that big fan that, like, you know, came up to you at the track. And she's like, oh, hey, nice to see you again. And then like 2 weeks later, I saw her at like a Publix. And then I kind of waved, and then I saw her again. I'm like, okay, this is getting, like, she probably thinks I'm stalking her. So the last time I like hid behind something, cause I was like, oh, I can't run into her again. Like, she's going to think I'm like following her around. But then if she sees me and I'm trying to hide, that's like even more incriminating. But yeah, she was very, very nice. And
that's so funny.
That was really cool to meet her.
All right. We'll move into the final questions that I ask every guest. First one is, it's the meanest thing you've read about yourself on letsrun.com.
Oh man, I do not go down that road. I do not. Do you want to tell me something mean that someone said? And then
I can't, like, I've never done like a live search with the other person, like as we're recording, but yeah, I'm sure. Well, I guess since you've garnered more attention in the past year, your name has probably come up multiple times on the message boards, but to my knowledge, I can't remember anything specific.
Yeah, I try not to go down that route because I feel like it's not, and it's weird too, because I feel like I'm doing it, but like that person like getting the attention isn't me. So I try to like stay very removed from it. So it's like when I hear someone say something nice, I even feel kind of removed from that. I don't know if I've just compartmentalized or whatever, but yeah, I try not to go down that road. I just don't feel like the bad or the good could contribute to making me a better runner. So mm-hmm. I'm going to try to stay off that. But I do love that the site is like a running mecca, right? And people mm-hmm. love to go there to get the results. And, you know, and that I do really, really appreciate, but I try to stay out of like the weeds of just like the noise there.
What's the funniest drug testing story that you have?
I have never been drug tested. So, and that's really funny too, because at one point, like, actually this is something that we can say, someone said like, oh, you know, something suspicious here. And in my head, I'm like, wait, are they implying that I'm on drugs? And my first reaction was being a little flattered, to be honest. Like, oh my gosh, I'm running fast enough for someone to think that I'm on drugs. Like, and then like thinking about it more, it's like kind of mean for someone to say that, like, because like, you don't know my journey. You don't know, like, and in a way that's like discrediting everything that I've worked towards and everything that I've done. But, you know, eventually, hopefully I'll be in a race that requires it and then everything will come out normal, like, and everyone will see. But yeah, that's a funny little thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess if you do set the American record at this race, there will be drug testing at the finish line, because that's part of it to, in order to get ratified.
Right, right. So
yeah,
so there you go.
If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, assuming they could hold a nice conversational pace with you, who would go on this run and where would it take place?
Oh, man. I think I would pick Malcolm Gladwell, because he's also a runner and I'm a huge fan of his. So I'm going to pick him and we're going to go for a run in, we're just going to pick some really cool trail. I don't even care where it is, but it's like off the beaten path. It's smooth enough that we don't have to like run in like one track, you know, we can run side by side. And yeah, that's where it's going to be. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a lame answer, but a cool backdrop, like a backdrop that you'd see in those like Runner's World, like pages, you know, like.
Yeah, that's a good answer. And I'm sure he listens to his podcast and I'm, you know, friends with him and he's on Strava.
What?
So yeah. He runs in New York City. So like I've gotten together, we did a workout maybe a month or two ago and we were supposed to. So it's funny enough, I ran this mile on a track in early October, and it was supposed to be a duel between me and him. And because, you know, he's broken 5 for the mile a couple of years back and he's 55. So really I'm like, it's a 27-year-old against a 55-year-old that maybe the 27-year-old should easily win, but he's in really good shape. And he's, you know, he's coming off an injury. But yeah, so we did this workout and then we were supposed to race a couple days later, but he had a table read for his next audiobook or some project that he's working on. And so
it sounds like an excuse. I don't know.
I know, right?
It sounds like an excuse. That's almost a little too planned. Maybe he got it like a whiff of your speed in that session. And it's funny because I saw you do that race. I didn't realize that it was supposed to be a duel.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a nice little showdown. But then, you know, we talked about it afterwards and, you know, we're hoping to maybe throw down a 5K together, because, you know, we might both be kind of in very similar 5K shape, but we'll see. We'll see if we can make it happen. I know he had like another calf injury or issue recently, but
yeah, we
stay in touch and maybe he'll listen to this and take you up on the
run. Awesome. I wouldn't know who to cheer for if you guys did like a head-to-head 5K. Like, I really like you, Chris, but I also really like him. So I don't know. That's going to be confusing for me. I guess I'll kind of just cheer for both.
The final question has nothing to do with running. You get 25 shots from half court on a regulation size basketball court. If you make one, you win $25 million. If you don't make any, you'll go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
No, I wouldn't. And that's, you know, if you would have said you get 25 shots from half court, will you make at least one? I would say, yes, I feel very confident I can make at least one, but I'm not a big risk taker. So if there's any sort of like negative consequence, like there is no way I would risk that. So yeah, I'm very confident, but I'm not a risk taker. So nope, no way. Pass on the shot. Let someone else try, and I'll be cheering for them, but not willing to do that.
That's the smart answer. I like it. Kira, thank you so much for doing this, and wishing you all the best of luck in your race next week. And then, you know, as you continue training for the marathon project.
Thanks, Chris. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on.
Many thanks to Kira for taking the time to chat. If there's any videographers in the New York City area who want to help me film a Survivor audition tape, I'm all ears. Just shoot me a message. If you're interested in sponsoring the City of Smack podcast over the holiday season, contact us, chris@cityofsmack.com, to get the word out about your brand, event, product, or whatever you like. Just let me know. We've got a new edition to the City of Smack newsletter dropping every Wednesday or Thursday this week. Get your news, commentary, and all the latest from the sport from me. It's super easy to subscribe. It takes less than 5 seconds if you just go to cityusmag.substack.com. It's also on the Cityusmag homepage, if that makes it easier for you. And last week, we gave away 2 Cityusmag crew neck sweaters. We're going to do it again this week. All you have to do is complete the crossword puzzle that's included in there. That's all I've got for this episode. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Episode number 200 is coming up soon. Legs are feeling good. See you guys next week.